The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. That was Happy Birthday, and this is our birthday edition. We've been online, on air, for 18 years, and it's all because of people like you listening in. In this half hour of the show, we're going to have our first guest that we ever had 18 years ago, Mr. Jerry Liebman of Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts, located in Southfield, a proud sponsor of the Jewish Hour for all these years. The portion of the week is the portion of Tzav, found in the book of Leviticus. We'll also talk about Purim, dynamite Hasidic story. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Israeli naval commandos intercepted an Iranian ship carrying missiles in the Red Sea that was en route to Gaza. Dozens of M302 missiles, which have a range of up to 150 miles, were recovered. U.S. intelligence services and military worked with Israel to catch the Iranian ship. This week's terrorist news: Arabs destroyed an IDF checkpoint near Shechem in retaliation for a raid that left a Hamas leader dead. IDF forces clashed with terrorists in the northern Golan Heights. Soldiers opened fire on terrorists who placed explosives near the border fence with Syria. And an IDF unit working undercover in Hebron arrested Ayub al-Kathwasami, one of the commanders of the Hamas military branch in the West Bank and one of Israel's most wanted men. Kawasami is suspected of being involved in terrorist attacks against Israelis during the Second Intifada and sought to renew Hamas's terrorism in the West Bank. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu came this week to speak at the AIPAC convention in Washington. Netanyahu met with President Obama. The president committed to the prime minister that he would push the Palestinian Authority to match any Israeli concessions as he seeks to negotiate a framework for peace talks. Obama has given April as the final date for setting up the framework. A religious Jew was attacked by four Arabs on the Paris metro. The man received multiple bruises. He was taken to the hospital and released. Police are looking for the attackers. Jonathan Pollard back in the news. The American spy for Israel serving a life sentence in federal prison was taken to a hospital and underwent surgery. He's in a weakened state of health. Pollard suffers from kidney and liver problems. And finally, while visiting California, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu signed an economic and research partnership agreement with the state of California with Governor Jerry Brown. The agreement will enhance cooperation between Israel and California on water conservation, alternative energy, cybersecurity, health and biotechnology, education, and agriculture. That's quite a lot. Netanyahu came to an empty consul in Los Angeles as the Israeli foreign ministry workers are on strike. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000, or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Specs Howard's own Jerry Liebman. How are you today, Jerry? And can we bring up Mr. Liebman? Hi, how are you, Jerry?
Great.
Good to hear. Good to hear.
Fine.
Now, you may or may not recall, but 18 years ago, approximately at this date, then we were doing the show on Friday, now we're doing it on Sundays, you were the first interviewee, the first guest of the Jewish Hour. And so in commemoration of 18 years on air, we have you back again. So what's news?
Oh, not much has happened in 18 years. How about you?
Just the same old, same old. Let's back up, and I apologize to anybody who is listening that some of the stuff from 18 years ago is going to be repeated, if you remember that interview. I have no idea how many people were listening to the show 18 years ago as a startup on a little tiny station located in Pontiac that now we're on the largest station in Detroit. So, tell us a little bit about Jerry Liebman.
Where do you want me to begin? 18 years ago or back when I was born?
start with Kittanning, Pennsylvania.
All right. I was raised in Kittanning, a great municipality of 5,000 people way back then.
Where is Kittanning?
It's in western Pennsylvania, a little bit north of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And that's where I was raised. And 5,000 people I thought was really a large city. I moved away. I went to college and came back and started a radio station in that little town. And did that for about a year and a half and decided management at that point wasn't for me. So we sold our interests. And then I went to work for another station in another part of Pennsylvania and stayed there for 3 years. And that was a move that was, I guess, the good Lord looked down and said, hey, you're going to go away and meet your bride, which I did in that town. So that's where I met Seal, and we were married in 1954. And it was a great trip back then.
You're coming up to 60 yep. years. You're just past 60 years.
That's, we just had 60th anniversary.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So how did you wind up coming to Detroit from western Pennsylvania, Jerry Liebman?
I left. I got a job offer to go to work for an NBC-owned and operated station in Cleveland. And I was, you know, as I say, from 5,000 people. All of a sudden, I'm going to Cleveland, had over a million people at the time. And I thought, how am I going to survive in that? I don't know even how to get from one end of the street to the other. But I took the chance, and I went. And I worked for NBC for a couple of years. And then the station was taken over by Westinghouse Broadcasting. And that's when rock and roll began, in 1956. So Westinghouse said, everybody's going to be a disc jockey. And we had 8 staff announcers on NBC who sounded in those deep, dulcet tones. I sounded like a soprano when I walked in there. But when management sent out the message that we were, in another couple of months, we're going to become a rock and roll radio station. Nobody ever heard of rock and roll top 40. I mean, come on. You played music, the Frank Sinatra, the Lawrence Welk, and some of the big bands, Stan Kenton at that time. That was the music, rock and roll. So nobody turned in a tape, and they all sat and said, it's demeaning to our position and to all those things that we've been trained for. How dare they even ask? And I went home and repeated the same thing to Seal, and she gave me that wonderful look she has after a pause and said, what do you got to lose? And I said, well, maybe she's right. I turned in a tape that I later found out was the most awful thing they ever heard, but I was the only one that turned it in. And they laughed, and they said, this kid, if he has guts to turn this thing in, only one of 9 announcers, let's give him a shot. And that's how I became a rock and roll disc jockey.
Okay.
And I stayed in Cleveland. We were there 13 years.
Let me interrupt you. Do you remember the first song that you played that was a rock and roll song?
I don't even remember my name back then. I was so nervous when I hit the air.
Speaking of name, how did Jerry Liebman become Specs Howard?
Well, I always went by Jerry Liebman on NBC. And when Westinghouse came in, they wanted everybody to have catchy names. The morning guy, Jack Wilson, weighed over 300 pounds, so he suddenly became Big Wilson. And Biggie, nobody knew his real name. It was just Biggie Wilson. And Swingin' Sweeney was on in the afternoon, so they looked at me and said, Jerry Liebman, it's a real nice name, but it's not a top 40 name. So at that time, they didn't have plastic lenses for glasses. Mine were like Coke bottle thick at the time. And they looked and said, well, hey, let's call him Specs. This is three big vice presidents from New York came in and sat down in the conference room, and I was stuck in the corner listening to this. And one of them said, hey, why don't we call him Specs? The other one said, Specs Liebman? Come on. It doesn't have a good ring to it. So one of the guys, I think they had a three martini lunch and they had come back, and he wobbled over to a phone book and he said, "I'll solve this." And he leafed through the pages, and there was Howard. So my name became Specs Howard.
Mm-hmm. Was it? You think there was
any? Beg pardon?
Do you think there was any anti-Semitism involved? Like, it's too Jewish a sounding name? Like, a lot of Jewish personalities were changing their names?
Absolutely. When I first went to work at, for the preceding 2 years, when I first went into NBC, they at times said Jerry Liebman. And it's a very nice get acquainted meeting in the office. And they said, "Have you ever thought of changing your name?" And I said, "No. What? What do you have in mind?" He said, "Well, you know, Liebman is hard to say, and people don't hear it right. And have you ever thought of, you know, just a simple name like Taylor or Smith?" Yeah, an Anglo-Saxon name is what they wanted. So, and I said, "No, I never thought of that, and I really don't think I'm interested." And they let it go with that. But everybody went by English names at that time. And I kept mine until this came, and then that was... the turn. I hit the air on February 6, 1956. I was on from 10 o'clock until 2 o'clock on that shift. And I hit the air, and there was no more Jerry Liebman. And some of my listeners' friends who used to call in, they thought I had been fired, I died, I moved away. They didn't know. Because all of a sudden, this new young disc jockey, Specs Howard, hit the air. So I always reminisce, I wonder what would have happened to Jerry Liebman had he stayed.
Indeed.
That was that story.
Did you have to put on a radio voice when you did your stuff on
it? No, they frowned on that. They wanted you to be you.
Oh, that's good.
They didn't say, you know, it was not like, don't talk at the people. You talk with the people. You know, it's conversation. Mm-hmm. And that was hard to learn for many people because they came away thinking that they had to adopt this radio voice, much like the NBC people did. But to answer your question, I stayed for 13 years there, and then one of the stations in Detroit, it used to be music, WXYZ, was all rock and roll music, and they heard us and liked us and said, "We'd like you to come to Detroit." And we stayed here for 2 years, and it was a bad move on our part. We didn't click in Detroit at all. So,
And that left you high and dry.
Well, yeah. And I had a couple of jobs. I went back. Cleveland invited me back there. We had a job offer in Chicago, but I didn't want to move my family around. We found a nice shul and a school, and the kids were going to Akiva at that time. And we made some friends in 2 years here that were very nice, so we decided to stay. And I looked around, and I didn't know what to do. And suddenly the thought came of a broadcast school, somebody suggested, and I laughed at him. I had known young, aspiring guys in high school and girls who would come in and say, "I want to get into the industry. What do I do?" And there were no broadcast schools of any import back then. So I used to tell them, go to college, major in speech and dramatics, minor in business, because this is a business. And that was it. So I started the school January 14th, 1970, and here I am.
That's
44 years later.
44, indeed. Now, you skipped over what I would consider a very important part of what makes Jerry Liebman, Jerry Liebman, Specs Howard, is when you were 8 years old, you were hit with polio. And
yeah.
So tell us, you were 8 years old, you were quite young, so you probably remember running around like every other eight-year-old, and then suddenly not being able to. How did that affect you?
Well, yeah, everybody was rough and tough. And, you know, in the summertime, you told your mom you were going outside and play, and she said, "Come back for lunch." There wasn't like the watchdog type thing it is today. You've got to keep your eye on your kid at every single moment. And we played in a neighborhood. We did whatever. It was all rough and tough. And it was during the Depression. I was born in 1926, so this was 1934. The Depression was still rampant. And it was very hard for my dad to make a living, barely. And many times he didn't, but we didn't know from that. We were just happy. We had a little garden in the backyard. And then when I got polio, it ceased. My dad opened a little grocery store, and it was doing well prior to me getting polio. Once I got it, the sign was up on our house. People would when they approached the side of the street where the store was, they crossed and walked over on the other side. In our little area there, 37 cases of polio hit, one of the largest in the nation to be concentrated in such a small territory. And I didn't know the difference. You know, I was sick. And it quarantined my sister, and my dad had to move out, and my mother had stayed with me. But at night, they used to sneak in, and they would take me out of bed. I was 8 and a half years old and weighed 37 pounds after polio. And they said, come on, you're going to walk. And I said, I don't care, okay. So I held on. I had a wrought iron bed, and I walked around holding on to the wrought iron railing at the foot of the bed. And they helped me, and it was like needles going through my legs. But that's the way it was back then. You weren't coddled. That was anything. Come on, let's push, let's go. And I remember when I was first able to walk. We lived right across the street from the elementary school where I went. So I got polio in the last day of July. And when school started, I missed the first month in September. But some of the big kids, the seniors, you know, who were sixth graders, would come over and make a seat with their hands and carry me across the street to school. And nobody showed me any kind of preference. It was, you know, you do what you can. And I had great upper body strength for a little kid. When I played baseball, I used to practically have to hit a hell home run and run to first base myself or gimp along to first base. But that's what they insisted on, and that's what I did. And it never really bothered me psychologically as much as it did perhaps some other people, because it was a rough and tough era when I was being raised with that.
That was definitely pre-Americans with Disabilities Act era.
There, none of that, yeah. And I remember I did some something where I earned a dime, and Franklin Roosevelt, president, had the March of Dimes for polio, and I remember putting a dime in an envelope and sending it off to Washington, D.C. to for March of Dimes. I felt so proud I sent my dime.
To help others, that's amazing.
That's right, yeah.
Which has been your motto. I mean, the idea of starting a school in order to provide, it says that the best form of charity that one can give is, rather than giving a person money, is to teach a person how to make their own money. So this has become your lifelong endeavor in making people self-sufficient.
Yeah, we've had about 15 graduates working in the industry over the years.
How many?
15,000.
Yeah.
15,000.
15,000 people. Yes. Any really famous graduates of the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts?
Oh, they all changed their names.
They all got some other
names. I don't know when they walk in, like Jerry Lieben and Specs Howard. I know them from the real name, but not the other one. But we have probably 15, 20. At WWJ, we've got about 15 or 20 people there by themselves. And we have working practically in every state in the union, in Alaska, in Hawaii, with the Peace Corps. We have, you know, the Voice of America and so on. We have all over. They graduate and go. Not only, it's not so much in broadcasting anymore as being the vocal part of it, but the behind the scenes is so fascinating with all of the different things you do, digital media and graphic design and so on. I don't know that I could even pass it now, because it changes every day. It grows and expands. But young minds grasp it very quickly.
That's a good thing about being the boss. You don't have to get tested again.
That's right. I think I would flunk. I would be the first one that never graduated from the Specs Howard School.
Okay. If you're just tuning in and listening to the Jewish Hour, we're on with Jerry Lieben, also known as Specs Howard of the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. He was our first guest 18 years ago. This is our birthday show, our anniversary show, and we thought, bring him back. Periodically, you've had physical setbacks which would set people really far back, but they didn't set you back. I mean, directly related to your polio, physical ailments, breaking various body parts, ripping things that shouldn't get ripped. Yet they weren't setbacks for you. Could you explain maybe if part of your Judaism and your faith maybe had something to do with that, Jerry Lieben?
I don't know. I think my marriage, Seal and I have been happy for 60 years, and I think she's helped me a great deal, where in her family, you always look to the bright side. Her father was a rabbi, and anything that went on in this world, it's, whatever it is, maybe it's meant to be, but it's something to push forward and look to a brighter side. And I never, when I see people who are walking on crutches, I feel so sorry for them, because to me, you know, I got a little problem, but they have a bigger one. I don't know. It's some psychological thing that hits. But I never, ever felt sorry for myself. And I just go and do my thing. That's, I don't know how else to put it. But
yeah,
it's not,
I would say that you're probably one of the more amazing people I've ever met, Jerry, as far as that goes. And never having a complaint about what's going on in your own life. I mean, you know, being happy with what you have. It says, who is a rich person is he who is happy with what he has. And I would definitely consider you a very rich person. And I think you do too.
Well, that's nice of you to say, and I thank you for the compliment.
Okay, so now, you said you were born in 1926. That means that right. You're 87 or 88. I don't know when your birthday is, sorry.
But on April 8th, right before Pesach.
Uh-huh. So you're going to be 88 years old, and you're still...
That's right.
You're still the guy in charge at Spex Howard School of Broadcasting.
Yeah, I go to work every day.
That seems like America. What about when are you going to retire, Jerry?
I don't think I ever will. As one of the guys who's been with me for 42 years said, even if you fire me, I'm staying here. They're going to have to carry me out feet first. So there's nothing else in my life to do. I enjoy it. It's not only a hobby and an avocation, but it's my vocation, and it's my way of life. I've done it. I've worked all my life, and that's it. So why would I retire?
Uh-huh. They say if you...
That doesn't fit into my plans or
yeah,
fields.
I couldn't...
Go to work.
Yeah, I couldn't see you, like, taking up photography or bird watching or knitting or any of those type of things. Not,
now, when the school is closed for a snow day and I'm at home, Seal is ready to pull her hair out. She's going to go someplace. I'm a bear. What am I doing? I have to do something. So, I guess everybody is programmed differently, but that's the way I am.
Mm-hmm. A real mover and a shaker. You're also a very important and integral member of your congregation. Can you tell us about your synagogue participation, Jerry?
Yeah, I belong to Shomrei Emunah, Rabbi Zacharias Shul.
How many years?
Yeah. Well, I was a founding father, I think, back in 1972. My son and I, at that time, were walking to another shul, and I had, for a change, hurt my ankle, so I was going slowly. And I didn't walk with a walker or anything then. And he said, and he knew what he was doing, Jonathan. He said, let's cut through this yard. I don't think the people will mind. We'll cut through. It was right there in a nice summer day by Rabbi Zacharias' house. And the smell of cholent came out there.
For those who are not familiar, cholent is...
Yeah, before the shul was built, the rabbi used to have services in his house.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, yeah. So... John says, let's look in here. I still think he knew where he was going. But we went to the front door, and there they were. No furniture in the living room at that time, just chairs around the wall. And there, right in the back end, was that chomp pot sitting. So davening went rather quickly, I can tell you, because we got to the chomp. But that was my first introduction to Rabbi Zacharias, and my goodness, that's what... 1972 is 28, 38. Well, he has his annual dinner coming up this Sunday night. So it's a big one. But that's how it started with the shul, and they had nobody else to put up for president one year, so they pointed to me, and we had a big board meeting of about six people, and I was elected unanimously by six votes.
There you
so
go.
I was president for a year. So I run the gamut, but it's nice. It's 6/10 of a mile from my house, and I can't walk there now. But the Burstons and neighbors, well, they'll always come by in the morning to push me to shul. And so I get to go pretty much in the summertime to shul every Shabbos and Yom Tov.
Okay. Now, the final question. What plans do you have for, say, like the next 18 years, Jerry Liebman?
Oh... But not to slow down, I'll tell you that.
That's
but,
good.
I go in. I spend about six six and a half hours a day, maybe seven some days at work. And I just want to keep it going. I started it from scratch in 1970, and I'd like to keep scratching. It just keeps going. It's one of these perpetual things. And the fascinating thing about our business, it's not like accounting, because accounting should be two and two is always four. I hope it remains that way when the man does my taxes. But in here, everything is different. We only taught radio when I started. Then we taught radio and TV. And then with graphic design, we added that. And then we added digital. And now we're looking at some of these other things that are coming down the pike that weren't invented 5 years ago, and thinking of adding them to our curriculum. So it's a fascinating business, and it always keeps you, I don't know if it keeps you young, but it keeps you thinking, keeps you moving, and that's what keeps everybody
sure.
else going.
And if for Specs Hour to stay in business and still remain a proud sponsor of the Jewish Hour, you have to remain cutting edge or past cutting edge.
That's right. You wouldn't accept me as a sponsor if I weren't, right?
That's right. We only have high-class sponsors here. You know, the Jewish Hour seal of approval. You know, so, okay, that's going to wrap it up, Jerry. Thank you so much. If you just tuned in, you missed a wonderful interview. Go to rabbifinman.com this afternoon. It'll be posted to the website for about a month. Jerry Liebman, president, CEO, chairman of the board, and whatever title they've ascribed to your name of Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts, is a commemorative guest, was our first guest 18 years ago. We brought him back for our happy birthday anniversary for 18 years. Jerry, continued success, and I reserve the right that when we're 36 years on air, that you come back again, if that's okay.
I don't know where I'll be answering you from, but call me.
Okay, good. Okay. Take
care. Take care. Thank you so much for having me
on. Bye-bye. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Herschel Finman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. We have, for your listening pleasure, this is Avram Fried, Die Genischt Yidden. Don't worry. It's after all. It is Adar after all. Time to be happy.
Tell you about two dreams I had recently. Ashenem cholim, hab ich gesehen in Beis Hamikdash Hashlishi, bin ich gewesen. Oye hanim zenen makriv korebon noiz Leviem zingen shir hamalos Moishe Rabbeinu led midiyo voiz Sanhedrin zitzt un her tadin toire Ahadn kunye yin zin Under me noire, und not sehe ich ein herrliches Gesicht. Es scheint seit Bonnie mit einem göttlichen Licht. Auf sein Kopf golden emkirun. Oy, oy derken imiş oy. Ay dost izlerim ey.
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale. Shul Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. We have up some Purim music. Purim is in a week. That's all. Next week, next Sunday, is the Purim edition when we do everything upside down. Indeed. This is Detroit's own Avi Schreiber. Avi Schreiber, for those who do not know, was actually a core member of the famous a cappella group Bitachon. And does weddings and bar mitzvahs and stuff here in the Jewish Hour, and occasionally does solo stuff like Move Like Groggers. Let's listen in.
We won't need no yard sign candle with them. Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Tzav. The word Tzav means command. It is found in the book of Leviticus. It is found in chapter 4 and following. No, excuse me, let's chapter 5 and following, and discusses and continues with the various and sundry services that went on in the temple, various sacrifices. The classic commentator Rashi comments on the word tzav, command. That what does the word command mean? Which is very interesting when you think about it. If you could, you know, sometimes I do this with people. I tell them, tell me the definition of. And this is a word that it's like so common, but it's like, how do I define such a word? So here's the word command. So command doesn't necessarily just mean to order. Because that's not going to get it done. Just because I tell you to do something doesn't mean that you're going to do it. Let's say, for example, the person whom I'm commanding is a lazy person. Just this really slothful type individual that just really couldn't be bothered. A real manana type person. So I tell him, listen, you got to do such and such. I'll get around to it. So commandments only work to people that are commandable. So Rashi, this commentary, says that tzav ein elazar is the word tzav, command, means to encourage, to like speed up, to instill alacrity. That's what he commands. And then he says, ein zoriz es elam ezorazim. That the only people that you can instill alacrity into are people who are alacritous. Meaning, it's kind of like, if you want something done, go find a busy person. Meaning, since people are eager to do, so this is the type of person that you can command. In the portion, it's talking about the Kohanim, the priests who worked in the temple. And these people, it says, they were right there, Johnny on the spot. When something needed to get done, boom, it was done. Not even twice did it have to be asked. They all knew where they had to be. They had their roles. Everybody was in the right place at the right time. Why? Because we're not talking about a job over here. You know, it's very interesting. In last week's portion, or 2 weeks ago's portion, a portion of Pagude. So I always sit down with people, and when we're talking about the portion of the week, and there it tells how much the sanctuary in the desert costs, this portable sanctuary that they traveled with for 40 years. And this year's cost, if you were to build the sanctuary in the desert today, it would cost you $85 million for materials. So this year, actually, the first time I'm teaching this 30-something years, several people ask me, well, what about labor costs? And the answer is if you tell somebody it's a mitzvah, then they do it for nothing. Just all you have to do is say, well, God wants you to do it. It's a big, it'll get you into heaven. Bing, no charge necessary. Okay, and indeed, the sanctuary was all built by volunteers. The temple, Solomon's temple, had paid workers. Those people, that was a whole big thing in the story of, the beginning of Kings 2, where he hired workers from Hiram, from Assyria. These were like skilled workers, and they got paid really well. But the sanctuary is all done by the Jewish people, and this was for their own benefit, and everybody contributed, and everybody pulled their own share. Whoever knew how to do what needed to be done, they did it, no problem. And in 3 months, this massive edifice with all its intricacies was done and ready to go. And people were chomping at the bit, waiting for it to happen. So now in this week's portion where it's told what they're going to actually use this sanctuary for, so Rashi comments that the word tzav means go find somebody who's commandable. Now, portion of tzav is this week, the day before Purim. As soon as tzav is over Saturday night, the Shabbos is over, it's immediately it's Purim. So we'll have to say that reading this portion is a preparation for the holiday of Purim. And we'll have to look in the portion and the meaning, the lessons that are taken from the portion of tzav, and how does it fit with the holiday of Purim. Purim, as the songs we've been playing suggest, there was an enemy who tried to wipe out the entire Jewish people. We overcame them, and it was instituted by the people at that time to make the holiday the most joyous day on the calendar. And it is celebrated by reading the Megillah. It's interesting that most synagogues have a reading. They'll have it Saturday night. And people tell me, yeah, I go to the Megillah. I hear the Megillah Saturday night. But you have to hear it also Sunday during the day. It is, everybody needs to be celebrating. So let's say somebody's poor. There's a commandment, special give to poor people. It says, anybody who stretches out their hand, you have to give them. Normally, during the course of the year, if somebody asks you for money, you can scrutinize. Do I want to contribute to this person's cause? Is this a worthy cause? Is this person telling the truth? Is this a scam? Purim, from sunrise to sunset today, next Sunday, you're not allowed to do that. Anybody stretches out their hand and says, please give me, you have to give them. It doesn't say how much you have to give them, but you have to give them. And giving at this cost, it says you have to give the worth of one hundredth of an ounce of silver is the minimum called giving, which that would be about 15 cents, would be the minimum that you could give somebody. So carry quarters around with you in case anybody asks and you don't feel like giving them any much more. Give quarters. You'll cover your bases that way. Then in addition to that, we have friends, and we want to ensure that they have a great Purim, and so we send gifts of food. There's people who are dressed up in costume, and people compare it to Halloween. I remember, I don't know how old my kids, two kids sitting in the back, and this is going back 20-something years, and one of them commenting that, you know, Halloween's just like Purim, and the other one's saying, yeah, but there's a difference. Because on Halloween, you dress up, and you try to dress up like something scary, and then you say, give me. And if you don't give me, then there's consequences, the trick or treat. It's interesting to say trick first. You don't say treat or trick, because you'd rather, actually, the kid would rather have the treat than do the trick, yes. On Purim, we dress up in, to try to be funny, to try to be, to lighten up the atmosphere, not scary. And we say, here, please take this from me. Let me give this to you. The best costume all my kids throughout the annals of history was my then 4-year-old, who had a voice like when you tell her to speak up, she would talk like this. And you'd tell her, could you talk louder? And she would go, I am talking louder. Okay, that's the way she talked. So we dressed her up as a lion. And people asked her, what are you? And she said, I'm a lion. Rawr! It was really very cute. Anyway, so you have this idea of giving. It's communal. It's like making things fun. And then, after all that, in the afternoon, we sit down and we chow down. It's a mitzvah to eat on Purim. And it says that the best meal that you have your whole entire year should be the meal that you have Purim afternoon. So what does the portion of tzav got to do with all of that? As Rashi says, we only give commandments to alacritous people, to people who are diligent, to people who are going to be doing them. And indeed, it says, Kiblu ha-Yehudim es asher hechelu la'asos. The Jews accepted upon themselves Judaism. Judaism, prior to the Purim story, it was in the doldrums. People were into assimilation. They were more into the three chariot garages, the fancy clothes, the riverfront property on the Tigris and the Euphrates, making sure that their kids got into the best schools. This is where Judaism was back 2,300 years ago. Excuse me, 2,500 years ago. Comes along now a decree of annihilation. And the decree specifically said, anybody who is Jewish will be killed in one day. All the Jew had to do was say, I'm not Jewish anymore. It never occurred to anybody to do that. That was the easy way out. You know what? I'm just going to stop being Jewish. There wasn't anything about genetics. It wasn't anything about, you know, creating master races or any of that type of stuff. It was just get rid of Judaism. Get rid of these people. No one said, I'm going to just give up. No, they all rededicated themselves. They grabbed on to their Judaism. They understood that this decree is because we're getting away from our Judaism. So Purim, like every other holiday, is a time for assessing, how can I help? How could I be better? Speaking of better, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Hi, this is Specs Howard from the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor the Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for the Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We thank Mr. Jerry Liepen, Specs Howard, for being the voice of request to the Jewish Hour, and request that you listen to what he says. Listen, it's the time for giving. It's Purim coming up next week. If I ask, you have to give, because that's the rule. How do you do that? Go to my website, rabbifinman.com, RABBIFINMAN.com. Go to the donations page, hit donations. It's all safe, secure, PayPal. What else will be you seeing on the rabbifinman.com website? You'll have archived editions of the show. You have the Yiparsha, Yuparsha, Hasidic You story, media of yours truly presenting Judaism, hopefully in a fun and entertaining way. And you'll be able to contact me as well. It's all over there. We have some time for the Hasidic story. Man, the Baal Shem Tov had a dream. A soul came to him and said to him, Rebbe, I am in the Garden of Eden, and I am basking in divinity, but one thing pains me. My one and only child, my son, has gone off the path of Judaism. Please help him. The Baal Shem Tov awoke, and within hours, this is how the Baal Shem Tov was able to do this. We'll discuss it another time. The Baal Shem Tov was outside of this man's house located in Paris. He had moved to Paris, married a Jewish woman, moved to Paris. And it was early in the morning, and the servant banged on the door, the servant of the Baal Shem Tov. No answer. He just told him, there's nobody answering. He said, just keep banging. Okay. Finally, the lady of the house looked out the window and saw the Baal Shem Tov sitting in a carriage and was just totally overwhelmed by the holy countenance that the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement, was displaying, and said, woke up her husband and said, we got to let this guy in. So we have this big empty house. They didn't have any kids. You know where the story is going already. And they set him up with a nice room, and word got out that the Baal Shem Tov was visiting Paris, and people are suddenly flocking and asking for blessings. And this woman's like, what's going on? Who is this person? They told him, this is the great Baal Shem Tov. You ask him for a blessing, and it comes true. So she went to her husband and said, we're married so long. Ask him for a blessing for children. So he said, I'm not interested in it. But after everybody was left and the Baal Shem Tov was left alone with his host, so they started talking. And the Baal Shem Tov said to him, what is it that you need? And he said, well, my wife wants me to ask for a blessing for children, but I'm not into such things. So the Baal Shem Tov said, my blessing is that within a year you will have a son. And then he said to him, what do you do for a living? The man said, I make wine. Baal Shem Tov asked him, do you do kosher wine? He said, nah, kosher wine, a bother. Oh, what a headache, a hassle to make kosher wine. And it's very in detail. And somebody up north in Traverse City area asked me if I would do a run of kosher champagne. And by the time we got through crunching all the details and the numbers, the guy just said, oh, forget it. And it was mutually agreed upon. Oh, forget it. What a hassle to make kosher wine. But the Baal Shem Tov said to him, if you'll make a run of kosher wine this year and bring it to Mezhebuz, I guarantee, that's where the Baal Shem Tov lived, I guarantee that you'll profit favorably. The guy just laughed and said, what do I need it for? I got enough money. The Baal Shem Tov said, no, Machmir Shoyes, it doesn't matter. You'll see. Baal Shem Tov left the next morning. A couple months go by, and the woman is indeed pregnant. So the man decided, you know what? I'm going to make that kosher wine for the Baal Shem Tov. Thank you for him. And he had this whole thing, loaded up the wagon, and at a rest stop got out, and the wagon driver drove off without him. By the time he came back, the man who was looking for the wagon, the wagon's looking for the man. If they would have stayed in the same place, they would have found each other. They missed each other. They didn't find each other. This man wandered for months from village to town. He spent all of his money. He lost his clothes and card games. He finally, from synagogue to synagogue, he was traveling and hearing stories about the Baal Shem Tov, and he realized that he had to come back to Judaism. And finally, he made it to Mezhebuz. And the Baal Shem Tov said, let's make a l'chaim. He took out a bottle of wine, and it was this man's wine. He said, Rebbe, that's my wine. It's not kosher. He said, no, 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 this is the kosher stuff. The wagon driver delivered it. And he said, now go back home because your wife is about to give birth. They live it happily ever after. And I hope you do, too. That's the show. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. Get ready for Purim next Saturday night. And we hope to see you again next week on our Purim show. Take care.